to Widnes Rugby Chat episode 26. We didn't have a podcast last week, but back this week. We've got an interview with Kieran Pirtle, with myself actually, at the Halton Stadium in the second half of this week's show. But there's a few things that I wanted to run through. We'll talk about the administrator's report, which has been published recently. There's some feedback from the latest Members Monday event, and then some information about the new fanzine, which is going to be released. Well, it's probably on sale as you're watching. Well, as this is released on Wednesday evening, it's going to be on sale at the Featherstone game. And then at future games, there's going to be a fanzine once a month. I'll go into a bit more detail on that later on. Before we get started, as always, we'd like to thank sponsors PD Law, Musical All Sorts, Arnold Gore's Financial Management, and Deals the Jewellers. So if you've not seen already, I've got my iPad with me, or an iPad with me, just to run through some of the stuff. If you've not seen the administrator's report, it's available on Companies House. It's a pretty lengthy document. There's not loads in there, and you know, if you follow me on Twitter and whatever, you may have seen a few of my thoughts on it. Very disappointing from a Widnes fan's point of view to see the content of the report, because it doesn't really tell us anything that we didn't already know. You know, it very much, I think I commented on Twitter, it, you know, James Real might as well have written it or produced it or whatever, because it's very favourable, shall we say, to the directors that basically ran the club into the ground. I suppose just scrolling through some interesting ones, there was a pathetic attempt to blame the council for the because of the rent or whatever that the council owe, and then the council of course take all the Papa Chris sales, which of course makes all the difference. Let's read through here. So they blame relegation, obviously, and the subsequent loss of income. I'm not sure whose fault that is, other than theirs, but you know, lack of sponsorship income, lack of central funding, season ticket sales. I mean, we had the famous quote that James Rule wasn't expecting a decline in season ticket sales when we finished bottom of the league, which is naive at best. There was some sort of bootlicking, I suppose, from you know, poor old James Rule finished as CEO at the end of January, but worked hard until throughout February in his capacity as director to try and secure required investment. There was a consortium, obviously, which we were aware of that came in. There's accusations that there was interest in the club from people that were time wasters, basically. Looking through a few more, obviously the RFL's mentioned, the club was owed, well, it seems to suggest the club was owed around £100,000 when it went into administration, and at the time of this report, only £14,000 had been received. Of course, we saw two academy players sold to Leeds, £30,000 was received for that. I mean, basically any money that the club brought in during that process was basically just went to the administrators, who earned a tidy sum of around £56,000 for their 6 weeks' work. And then there was a few legal fees and stuff on top of that as well. So yeah, very, you know, very underwhelming, it has to be said. I mean, you know, obviously we've had, you know, there's been a lot of comment and a lot of content around this. There's a very blurred line, I suppose, between legal and moral. You know, executives saying, you know, I think someone said on Twitter that executives taking high salary isn't necessarily a, well, it isn't, you know, there's nothing criminal or whatever about that sort of thing. Obviously, the problem with witnesses being that the board of directors were the executives, or certainly a proportion of the board of directors were the ones taking executive salaries. So, you know, very, very disappointing. Reason for failure again. Councils mentioned, you know, £780,000 was paid to the local authority in 7 years, it says, in rents, which, to be honest, given that the club's whole operation is based there, you know, I don't think that's an unreasonable amount. the Kevin Brown money's mentioned, and that apparently filled the gap in the cash flow caused by falling season ticket sales, so blaming the fans, facilitating new contract for the academy players, and also provide additional funding for the first team squad, which is a load of... So yeah, have a look at that on Companies House. It's 55 pages. It's, I mean, you can scroll through it, to be fair. There's a lot of bump in there. Bottom line is a bit disappointing. Not really sure what more anyone can do to sort of get to the bottom of anything. I mean, I've made some attempts to get freedom of information requests into the NHS to see what's going on with the funding that the club obviously received via those avenues, so I'm just waiting to hear back about some of those things as well. So I mean, very, you know, very disappointing, I suppose. I mean, not more so disappointing than you know, the problems that the club's been through. I know some people do want answers or want to see some sort of, not justice, because that's a bit extreme, but they want to see, I don't know what people want to see, but people want to see something or someone, you know, called out for what's gone on. It's looking increasingly likely that's going to happen. Of course, the new club, if you like, is getting severely punished because it's having its funding withdrawn at, you know, at all various places. You know, I understand that the club's actually paying a loan back to the RFL that was taken out by the previous custodians of the club, and it's like, well, on one hand you're saying we can't have the funding money because it's a new club, but then on the other hand you're making the new club pay the old club's debt. So very, you know, very awkward situation. So yeah, check that admin report out. You search on Companies House, you can find that, and the link's kicking around on Twitter and stuff as well. I didn't make it to the members' night on Monday. I can't really do Monday night, so the one I went to the other week was a Tuesday, which was good. But Dave Murphy, who is DLM Viking, posted a good update on the Widnes Rugby Forum. So I'll just skim through some of the points made there in case any of you watching haven't seen it. The club basically said they need average attendance of about 4,000 to meet budgets, which fairly reasonable. The club has, of course, been getting 5,000 plus quite often. I mean, there was one, I can't remember the game recently, where it just dipped below 4,000, it was 3,800. But if you can keep that attendance up, then obviously that's great. Some income streams are being surpassed, others aren't. Club's still in special measures, and in my conversation with Kieran Pirtle later on in this podcast, he does mention about the special measures. There are currently 2,700 season ticket holders, of which 700 are children. Of course, children were free. There was a junior stronghold offer over the winter, which was free with an adult. Josh Ganson is still on trial. He was allowed due to the money freed up from Liam Hood leaving. They're hoping to keep him. Mentioned this on the last episode, the club are looking at around 1.5 million turnover to be a full-time operation next year, compared to maybe £600,000 turnover to be part-time. There's still very much, you know, that's still very much up for discussion whether the club is going to be full-time or part-time. There's no answer as to why the academy money that was mentioned has been taken off. The club's being told that it must run a reserve team next year. All Super League clubs and all clubs with a Category 1 academy have to run a reserve team in 2020 as part of the new rules. So that's obviously a massive issue for Widnes as well, because you've got to find another squad of players and you've got to find, you know, the appropriate costs or whatever to play those games. Anthony Gellin is still injured. They're hoping he's going to be back on Sunday against Barrow, but the club has said that they're offering him around to other clubs. They basically need Gellin's salary off the books, which I don't think comes as a surprise to anybody. You know, he's not played for 2 months as well, which is far from ideal. There's no doubt that the videos and his presence does have an impact, but the harsh reality of the situation is that the sheer cost of Anthony Gellin in the current situation that Widnes find themselves in just doesn't stack up. I'm filming this before the 1895 Cup game against Featherstone, so this point may well be invalid. But, and I know, to be fair, Kevin Pirtle has said this before, they are keen to do well in the 1895 Cup, and looking at the teams that are in it, there's a massive opportunity for Widnes to get to Wembley, which would of course potentially open up additional revenue streams for the club. You know, if there was a Wembley trip. They're looking at other income streams. The lottery's mentioned. There's still significant debts, which we know. 17 players are out of contract at the end of the season. Again, Kieran Pirtle mentioned about something about this in my chat with him, so I'll leave that one there. Becoming sustainable is the priority. I think it's fairly clear that there's no big money men involved in the club, you know, ready to sign off cheques. So the club's got to be sustainable. I had a call actually this morning from someone from the club as a result of me going to the sponsors evening, you know, chasing up sponsorship, etc. The Championship are looking to negotiate their own TV deal, so I don't know if you've seen some of the articles floating around about Swinton looking to rebrand to Manchester, the possibility Toronto may not be going into Super League. That all sort of links into the Championship is basically having to run itself now and try and find its own funding. They're looking at season ticket prices and, you know, all the sort of things that you'd expect. So thanks to Dave for that lengthy update. Always good to get updates. And I don't think there was a great number of people at the Members Monday event. Whether having them every month might be a little bit too much, maybe every 2 months the club might be better off doing it that way. Probably not for me to decide, but that's it. So, right, I've had enough of negativity now, so we're going to move on to positive. Something positive I've got, I've not got an actual physical copy, but I've got the online copy of the new Widnes fanzine Up the Vikings, which has been produced and is available, I believe, now. It'll be there at Featherstone Game, there at Barrow Game. It's basically going to be a monthly fanzine. It's going to come out, aim for the first home game of every month. I've got pieces in there. I've got the interview with Kieran Pirtle and also with Hep Kale, but there's loads of stuff in there. There's a piece with Jim Mills, there's a piece of Alan Ray, there's the return of Ethel Hanley, there's a bit more information. Whistle, of course, are behind, are driving it. So Whistle have got, there's a bit more information about what Whistle are doing and all their fundraising events that are coming, what the club's doing as well. RL Picks have done the front cover as well, which looks good. The whole purpose, I suppose, of the fanzine is to give another revenue stream for the club. So it's on sale for £2. Pretty much, well, 100% of the revenue is going to go to the club because the costs associated with producing the fanzine have been covered by sponsors. So that means, you know, 1,000 copies, £2 to go, £2,000 going into the pot for the club. So, you know, you'd like to think we've got maybe 5,000 fans maybe have been turning up to the games if everyone bought one. I mean, you know, that's a real good revenue stream for the club every month. If you want to get involved with the fanzine, or you want me to put you in touch with the Whistle people, and you know, if you want to sponsor it or advertise in it or whatever, you know, just leave a comment or get in touch with me on Twitter. I think it's 20 pages this first one, but I've said, you know, I'm more than happy to help facilitate growing it, and you know, if there's more content out there. I did the old fanzine Get Into Him about 13, 14 years ago, and that did pretty well. So hopefully, and generally, I think my experience of the fanzine last time was it was good when it started, but it got better and better as the issues went on. So hopefully we'll see that happen with this one as well. So that's the fanzine. Obviously, home games coming thick and fast at the moment. We've got Barrow at home on Sunday in the league, so it'd be good to get people down for that. I went to the stadium pre-game against Sheffield to speak to Kieran Pirtle about the current situation at the club, find out a bit more about him as well. There's a bit, they turned the tannoy on, the music on in the middle of the interview as well, so brace yourself for that. It just gets a little bit of background noise on that. But my interview with Kieran Pirtle follows this. Thanks, as always, to Musical All Sorts, PD Law, Arnold Gorse Financial Management and Deals & Jewellers. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Kieran Pirtle. Please do share, like, comment on the videos, and I'll see you next week. I wanted to ask a bit more about your early life as well, get to know you a little bit. Yeah. About, because obviously you played, didn't you, and retired injury. What was the injury that you had?
Shoulder.
And obviously you went into coaching pretty soon after that, yeah. Didn't you? What made you do that? Was it the love of the game? And
probably it's one of those things you always look back is. Like my dad used to coach football and stuff, and it's probably something about, you know, you don't really, as you're growing up, you kind of, your parents mold what you're doing a bit. So I always go and watch my dad, and he used to coach football, and you know, he was from a farming background, so we used to, you know, go farming as well. And then when I played rugby, I used to play rugby on a Saturday morning and then go to the farm and work on Sunday, play rugby and then go to the farm. And you know, just probably that work ethic and that just being around my dad on them types of things kind of just led to it. So when I went playing, I was always into just, you know, asking questions and taking notes on different things. And, you know, ultimately it came to the point where I was playing at Lee. Ian Millward had come over, and I was struggling with an injury, and I started helping out there with the youth development, doing some coaching with the academy. And then Ian obviously moved on to St Helens, and I played, I think it was 2000, we played, you know, most of that year. I was towards the back end of that year, I was having about 4 jabs in my shoulder to play. I had an operation on it at the back end of that year. Came back from that, struggled to properly get over it. Again, in between that, just to help the club out more and keep myself busy, I was doing a bit in the schools, coaching and dropping into it. I started doing a little bit with the service area at the time then with a guy called Pugsley, who was a bit of a legend in Lee. Just helping out with him. And I had the operation, I came back, played a few games. 2001 again, probably only played about 4 or 5 games. And it was on here actually, I played a game against Sims Cross in the Challenge Cup. And the dropout came, and I landed on the ball, and someone landed on top, and I just felt something snap in my shoulder again. And, you know, I'd snapped my bicep off my shoulder then. Mm. So I had to have that repinned, and I just never quite got over it. You know, back then, it's probably the medical care wasn't as good.
So did you play again? No, that wasn't your last game.
No, that weren't my last game. I tried to come back from that a couple of times. It never quite right. And funny enough, the actual last game I played was for Lee Reserves. You know, I was desperate to play rugby like we all do when we're younger. And the reserves are going to Whitehaven one Saturday.
Was this the one you scored 7 tries?
Yeah,
I've heard about this.
They were short of players, and I said, "Listen, I'll play." And like, "No, you can't." I went, "Listen, I'll play." I said, "It's only reserves." I went, "I'll just stay out at Wayne. You know, I'll just give you a body." I went up and scored 7 tries, and that was probably like my last game really. After that, I never got going again. And while I was struggling, I just got a phone call off Ian Millward one day, and he kind of said, "Listen, I know you're struggling with playing and getting back. You know, you've always been into coaching, and you know, obviously I must have made an impression on him when he was at Lee in terms of, you know, what I can offer and attitude and work ethic." And he just said, "Listen, come up on Friday night." They were playing a game. He said, "This software has just come out now." You know, back in 2002, it was all new. The software, there were still teams working on the old tape recorders and two for top, but they bought an Apple Mac and some sports cord. So he got me up. He's had a guy who came in, because Basil was absolutely useless on computers, like broke, I don't know how many computers. And this guy took me through it, and he went, do you reckon you could do it?" I went, "Yeah, I reckon if, you know, give myself a week, I could learn how to do that." And at the time I was doing that, I was one of the sponsors at Lee, had offered me a job in a gym, and I was working there, and they wanted me to go into partnership with him, but it weren't something I really wanted. I still wanted to stay in rugby. So I basically, from that meeting, I took the trial for a month, and I've been coaching ever since. That was since 2002.
Obviously, I was at the members' night the other week when you had the screen up with your analysis and, you know, your stats and crunching the numbers and stuff like that. Is that something that you've pretty much done since them days?
Yeah, that was really, for me, was the way into coaching. So when I started at St Helens, you know, it were long days. I used to start at 7 and then finish probably at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. So I used to come in with the first team, you know, clip all the clips up, give them all the individual clips, do all the stats for them, help with training during the day. Then at night I'd coach the 18s and the reserves at the time. And, you know, that was my way in. And I suppose everything I learned was just self-taught, and I've kept on that path going. And you know, I always really tried to keep up with technology and, you know, provide a bit of you know, support to wherever I've been on the stat side of things. Yeah.
How have you adapted then to being sort of a support staff doing the stats to doing the stats for your own job as a head coach?
Well, this job's a little bit different at Widnes. You know, in previous places, as assistant coaches, you kind of split the stats between you. So one might do attack and defence stats, and one might do off the ball. But this year at Widnes, I've not had the staff, so I do it all myself. So, you know, it's been tough at times. You know, my normal week is I'll finish a game and I'll go home and I'll get the video, and, you know, it'll be probably 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning before I've got the first lot of stats done. And then I'm back in the office at 7 the day after, just finishing it off, so I can present the, you know, the review to the players, the individual stats and their clips, so they can all go through them. So No, it's in some ways it's tough, but in other ways it's good because you're keeping a check on everything, and you know yourself, you like the quality control and everything you're doing.
Yeah. How difficult have you found it, obviously, with the restrictions in place, you know, not being able to bring players in and plug maybe holes that you've identified?
Yeah, it's very tough. You know, and I always said when I first came in, I didn't think we quite had enough experience in the team to compete against the likes of Toronto. You know, that was before we lost like Hoodie, Welle, Inu, Tanga to those guys. I always, you know, thought we needed two teams, a team of what you call men really, and a team with the younger guys interlink with them, bring them in for a couple of games and bring them out and bring them along nicely. And you know, that we've not been able to do that. We've had to throw some of the young guys in straight away, and you know, a lot of these guys now have never played against men before this year, and they're having to, you know, back up now 15, 16 games in a run, and you know, physically it takes its toll on them, and mentally it takes a toll, because you know, they're still young, a lot of them, they're 20-year-old, and I was talking to one of them the other week, and he hasn't been out since New Year, you know, and the young men, they're 20-year-old, and you know, people should say, well, they shouldn't be out if they're professional, and if they want to succeed, which they shouldn't, but at the end of the day, they're still young people, and they need to enjoy themselves and relax. You know, but they're in the pressure cooker now, and every week's intense for them, and having to get up. So I think if you look at all the other teams around us as well, especially when you get past that Easter period, everyone's strengthened the team. So whether that's be dual reg or loan players or new signings, every team in our comp's done that. And we're over the year, we've probably weakened our squad, you know, through the administration and what we've been, and bringing those new players in, just, you know, they add a bit more competition to places. They bring a new voice, a bit of characters coming into it, and they just freshen things up. And you know, we've not had that luxury of doing that. We've brought Josh Ganson in, who's been on a 4-week trial, and he's brought a bit of that into him. He's a good character around the place, but
he's still young.
He's still young. And you know, it's crazy. I'm bringing people like Jaden Hatt into the team and asking 20-year-old Keenan Brand to look after him, and where, you know, I should be getting experienced guys to look after Keenan. Now he's all of a sudden he's played nearly every game for us, and he's one of the guys who's saying, you're right, you're one of the senior heads at 20 years old. And you know, that'll take its toll on them this year, but I think in the long run all those players will benefit from it. But you know, we just got to be patient with the guys at the moment.
Are you hopeful that maybe at some point this season you might be able to add bodies, or?
No, you know, we're told we're in special measures now till the end of the year. They've not given us a deadline when that's going to finish. They just said basically wait till the end of the year. So, you know, unless we get any people available for trial to come in, we won't get any bodies in.
Right. You mentioned Toronto before, and I wanted to ask you this because you did some coaching, yep, with the Canada national team at some point. Obviously, Toronto were basically your nemesis at Lee last season. You had the perfect run almost, didn't you, until obviously they pulled the plug on you. What do you make of the whole Toronto thing?
I suppose it's one of those. Everyone's a bit sceptical from it. You know, I think everyone's looking actually what do they bring to our game over here. Until probably they bring a bit more sponsorship in and they start producing some Canadian players, people will always question that. But when you go over there, it's a great experience. The fans love it. It's a great city, Toronto. There's lots of people turn up and watch the game. The game day itself, so it's a good venue in terms of where it's situated in the city. There's a party atmosphere around. So from that point of view, it's really good. But you know, it does have its downsides with the travel and the time difference. And I'm sure there's only time will tell how successful they'll be.
You mentioned Lee. Obviously, last season you had a really good sort of middle two thirds of the season, if you like, and then sort of the rug got dragged under your feet. How hard has it been for you, obviously being in that situation in Lee, and then coming to witness and being in the situation you've been here? Is that taking a toll on yourself mentally?
No, I don't think, you know. Mentally, it's part of my job. This is what we do, and it's almost become the norm for me. So it's, you know, nothing shocked me. I've not come up against anything really that I've not been through before now and not experienced. But we're human beings at the end of the day, so it is tough. And you know, the energy that, you know, I try to put into training, into game, and into preparation, you know, at some point does catch up with you. And you know, that's important for myself as well, is to make sure I get enough relief away from rugby league. You know, I have a family, I have two young boys who both play rugby, and you know, I have to make sure I make enough time for them as well and not neglect them, as well as having, you know, 24 young kids here as well, what I'm looking at. Even some of the older guys, sometimes you have to babysit. So it's got its challenges, but you have to balance it. And you know, I'm quite lucky that I'm not shy of work, and I've got a good work ethic, and you know, I just basically I turn in every day and just get on with it.
In hindsight, would you have stayed at Lee, looking at what's gone on there since?
It was always difficult, you know. At the time I left Lee, you know, they weren't quite sure again which way they were going. They talked to me about a contract. It was a 12-month contract, which was on quite a lot less money than I was on the year before. And I genuinely believe when I came to witness with, you know, what I was being told and the squad, what was in place. And I thought with the squad we had in place, as the year went on, we could add to it, we'd have a genuine chance of going up. And you know, you look at the infrastructure, what's here with the academy and the stadium and the training facilities, it is first class. And you know, that's what drew me towards the job. And I thought that was at the time was the best opportunity for me, you know, for myself to coach in Super League.
And obviously now you have to look ahead to next season, I guess, for that sort of dream, if you like. How difficult is it for you at the moment to manage two things? The loss of confidence that the players have got at the moment, but then also the uncertainty about the whole full-time, part-time thing for next season?
Yeah, it is. I suppose you can call it a loss of confidence. And, you know, there's a few things within the team that are not good at the moment. And I know how to fix them, but I can't. And that's bringing some bodies and freshening it in and getting some experience around there. You know, that would help us a lot. I think there's a bit of mental fatigue in us at the moment, just through what we've been through and the amount of games the young kids have played. And you know, again, it's hard for them to get themselves up every single week for it. And you know, what they perceive to be working hard sometimes in games isn't exactly working hard. And that's something we've been addressing over the last couple of weeks. So you've got that side of it, and then on the other side, you've got you know, all the issues, what's happening around the club. So you know, is the club going to be full time, part time next year? I think Ian Watson came out last week and said, you know, it's about players being spoken to other clubs, and he's probably got three or four players there who's been told, you know, they're not sure about all clubs are talking to. Where I think in our squad we've probably got about 80% of the squads, you know, in that situation where the club can't give them a definite answer yet. So you've got to deal with that, and a lot of them are young guys, you know, just starting off with families, just bought houses and mortgages. They've got to deal with that. And then some of the older guys, again, coming towards the back end of their careers, they're wondering what they're doing. And then you've got the other side of the guys who are on contract for next year, who still don't know what the club's going to be full-time or part-time or what they're going to be. And then I've got myself as well. You know, I'm in exactly the same situation. I have no contract for next year. I don't know what's happening. So it is difficult. It is our job. We have to be professional about it. But again, at the end of the day, it does play on people's minds. And you know, it's not just the players, it's their families, their wives, their partners will all be asking, you know, can we book an holiday at the end of the year, or you know, where are you going to be working next year, what we're going to be doing, how we're going to be providing for our family. And you know, that can take its toll, and that probably all comes into that side of being that little bit of mental fatigue. And you know, as you know, sooner the club can sort things out and set out which direction it is, whichever way, then I'm sure all those things will settle down, it'll be better for everyone.
And last word, so I can let you go and prepare for the match. Are you worried slightly about the comparisons to Bradford a few years ago, where Bradford obviously came back from 12 points pretty quick and then sort of bombed the rest of the season, ended up getting, you know, relegated?
Yeah, I suppose people are always going to compare that. And I think if you go right back to, you know, when we got knocked to minus 12, I see him and said to the boys, the easy bit is getting to zero, it's what you do after that. You know, when everyone's patting you on the back, there's a really feel-good factor around the place, and you're thriving off the atmosphere. But you know, as soon as you lose a couple of games, that kind of dies off a bit. You know, the crowds are dying off a bit. The you know, people are probably saying a few more negative things than what they were going to be. So, that threat's there. Obviously, we're not stupid, but we don't really concentrate on the table as such as where we are, because ultimately we know we have to win games. So, I'm trying to take a bit of that pressure away from the players about, you know, talking too much in the relegation zone and where we are. But ultimately that's where we are, and we know we have to get out of that. So you know, we're just taking each game as it comes, and we know we have to win it. You know, unfortunately we've not put performances together over the last few weeks, and you know, we've come up short in a couple of games, and we have to start winning games. You know, that's the brutal honesty of the sport we're in and the situation we're in. So you know, we'll just keep focusing. You know, hopefully tonight we'll get the right result. If not, then we'll just focus on the next game and keep working out as a group, and you know, hopefully things will turn for us soon.